What's up, everybody? This is Jordan Rossler and Derek Ambrosen from the Dynasty Builders Podcast, part of the DLF family of podcasts.
Each week, we use film analysis, rookie breakdowns, ADP, analytic tools,
and a dose of humor
to ensure that you get actionable and practical advice from each and every episode to help you build a dynasty.
Welcome back to the Dynasty Crossroads. My name is Peter Howard, at Pierre Howardy on Twitter. I write for DLF, DynastyLeagueFootball.com. I do projections for PlayerProfiler.com, weekly and seasonal. Don't know why I threw that in this week. Welcome back. Dynasty Crossroads in season, decided to switch it up and create a little bit of a format, something of a format, for myself in season as opposed to off season, where I explore myths and trends and things we should know about dynasty moves, when players produce, stuff like that, how vacated targets don't matter. In season, I'm looking, I'm just noting observations I make on a week-to-week basis that might have dynasty implications, or at least looking at what happens week-to-week from a dynasty perspective. Too often we look at them from a week-to-week perspective because we're trying to win, because we should always be trying to win. But I think there's often a longer-term view on most things. So yeah, that's what we're doing. This week, real quick, one take kind of recording because I stayed up way too late trying to get Tampa Bay right with Antonio Brown coming back, and also, you know, San Francisco just having entirely new players they pulled off the street. So here we go. I'm basing this largely off the notes I made in my target share article that I write for DLF every week. By the way, if you want to check it out, if you're interested in, you know, kicking my ass in a weekly game, I'm hosting, I keep forgetting to mention, I'm creating DraftKings head-to-heads every week. It's not a sponsored thing, that's just where I play a very small amount of money to have some fun with DFS every week. And they're just $1 head-to-heads, but if you'd like to come clap me in a cash gain and take my dollar, I post them on Patreon. Anyway, where were we? So target share. Now, it's a target share article, but I kind of wish it wasn't a target share article. It's not the stat I'd go through first, but volume is important, and target share is the key well-known volume stat, so that's where we begin. So just to start off, looking at the top 12 receivers in target share so far this season, several players are sticking out to me consistently. Robbie Anderson and Terry McLaurin have been in the top 12 season long for the last 2 weeks. They finally climbed in there now. Terry McLaurin's top 12 target share, what's he at right now? It's around 30% overall. We actually have five players in the top 12 with 30% or over, and that I would be surprised if that sustains over the course of the season. That doesn't have a very large week-to-week or dynasty implication. It's just we rarely see that many players stick at 30% or more. In fact, normally it's just DeAndre Hopkins, and he's one of the five right now. Devontae Adams can do it, Keenan Allen can do it, and they're both at their level as well, but still, we should expect some of these to climb down with lower games and lower target games throughout the season. But either way, Terry McLaurin's volume is held up right now because he had bye last week, and the week before he had a 52% target share. And I said in the article, not even in Washington is that level of target share sustainable. So yeah, he's probably one of the ones that's going to drop out of the 30%. But I was simply noting, I talked about him a lot last week on the podcast and in my weekly article for Dynasty League Football. What he's doing isn't just impressive. It's impressive enough to turn a hater into someone who is impressed. And I am steadfast in my hatreds, I guess. But no, he of the five wide receivers, I was lower than consensus I did at the start of the season. He's the only one who's severely proved me wrong. And to do it in Washington, it's incredibly impressive. I suggest you listen to last week's episode or read last week's article for all the stats I rolled out about how he's competing with the best this year in terms of efficiency and in terms of volume. And that's really tough to do in Washington. Doesn't necessarily increase his ceiling over players like A.J. Brown, but it is notable to me, especially on a dynasty perspective, where I think his value might be soft, by which I mean you might be able to buy him for his value. For example, like if you go to a trade calculator at Dynasty League Football, we have one. Everyone has one, I think. And look up their value. Very rarely, or if they're really top 5, top 12, top 20 Dynasty assets, you're very rarely going to send that trade and get it accepted. But by soft, I mean people are more willing to trade at that value. So if Terry McLaurin's value right now is 2 firsts, you might be able to get him for that value. Whereas if AJ Brown's value is 2 firsts as a top 12 wide receiver or a top 5 Dynasty asset, whatever he is right now, if you sent that offer, 3 firsts, whatever it is, I don't think it would get immediately accepted. I think he might, obviously he can still trade for almost every player at the right price, except some owners, I guess, are always going to hold on or make mistakes that way. But still, anyway, that's just what I mean by soft value, just a quick understanding what I mean by it. Outside of those two players, Robbie Anderson is the other one who I also noted last week. Like, could that man catch a touchdown? He hasn't caught a touchdown since week one. He's currently got 689 receiving yards per touchdown. That's all his receiving yards per his one touchdown. Unsustainable doesn't do it. One more week and I'm going to start saying Robbie Anderson is going to start losing opportunity because he's not scoring touchdowns. And I think Curtis Samuel, who showed up a little bit last week, and DJ Moore can. So he either starts catching touchdowns or is going to go away. That's my feeling on it. Dynasty-wise, though, I'm not buying. I'm still not buying Robbie Anderson. I'm sorry, I'm not. I didn't see this coming. I don't think many people saw it coming. Most people saw Samuel and DJ Moore being the top two in that offense, and Robbie Anderson is having a far higher A dot and far lower target share. But, you know, he's proven us wrong. But based on his, I don't know, this sounds weird, but his draft capital, his situation, the team investment, and everything else, as much as I'd like to be really excited about Robbie Anderson in Dynasty, and I would acquire Robbie Anderson for this season, and I wouldn't feel bad about having him on my roster for next season either, because he's been very impressive this year. And he was impressive on the Jets, not as impressive as Terry McLaurin, but being impressive in a bad situation is, well, impressive. But I don't think we're going to see the ceiling long term, and we're certainly never going to recoup that value if we buy him. But he's definitely more of a 2020 move for me. Outside of that, it's really Team Old Guy. I'm sorry, Team Old Guy is showing up right now. You've got Keenan Allen, Adam Thielen, even Travis Fulgham is 25, I think, which is pretty old for a guy who just showed up for the first time being a significant producer in the NFL. My notes on Travis Fulgham just literally say, I told you, because I wrote a lot about him last week. And even with Jalen Reagor's return and doing excellent on the 2 targets and 2 receptions he got, and I do expect him to be the high dynasty, high producing off player in this offense, Travis Fulgham is good. I mean, sorry, he's good. Sorry I never knew about him before. It sticks in my craw, a low drafted player from an out-and-out conference. Wasn't on my radar, but he wasn't. But now he is. Unfortunately, a lot of data, we end up saying, you know, we have to see the trend before we believe it, which means it puts you behind. But Travis Fulgham and Adam Thielen, actually, like, he did this as well. The trend developed and people wouldn't go in on it because it's Adam Thielen, because it's Travis Fulgham. Just go in on it. I'm not saying go crazy. I think his value right now is probably an early, mid-second, if I were to guess about trade calculator values. Therefore, I will go up to a late first because I want to add him. It's hard to find good producers, and good producers that show the trend and show the ability that people are still like, really though? Yes, really. Travis Fulgham's good. I don't know what to tell you. He's good. He's got an ADP in October. I'm waiting for the new ADP to come along still. It hasn't shown up in the table at least. Wide receiver 111, which is a drastic increase to where he was before the season, obviously. But yeah, that's probably not going to go up too much. People don't want Travis Fulgham, apart from the people rostering him right now, because that's fun. And I would advise getting in on that fun long term. Even if I'm out, try and add him on a bigger trade, for more liquid capital, like picks. All right. So Ryan Keeley posted an interesting thread on Twitter the other day and decided to steal the idea and incorporate it and turn it into a dynasty thing. He was ranking underperformances based on fantasy points over or under expected. He was using a different model than mine. I'm using RotoViz's model, but it was interesting to me. He was ranking them in terms of worst performances this season that happened last week. And I thought that's an interesting way of looking at it. So I looked at it through RotoViz's model on the top, how many did he get? The top eight worst weeks from last week that rank in the top 10 of bad weeks for this season. So significantly bad. So bad, it's almost impressive. And by bad, I'm meaning you're getting given an expected value from your team just from the volume you're getting, and you are underproducing it so far that you rank in the top 10 for that stat this season. That's an impressive amount of bad luck or inefficiency, shall we call it, from last week. So Jarvis Landry, Jimmy Graham, David Montgomery, Greg Olsen, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, I think you all could have guessed that one, and Jared Goff were all on that list. So I made some notes on them and went into them a little bit. Now, there are some players on this list that actually have made a habit of doing this season. David Montgomery and Josh Jacobs both average fantasy points over expected below -2. That's pretty bad to average that. They're underperforming their volume. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean Josh Jacobs is now David Montgomery. This isn't comparing the two players or where they get their volume. For example, Josh Jacobs is getting 18 expected points per game. That's a high volume mark for a running back. That's actually just under what Jared Goff's expected points per game is. And as you can imagine, quarterbacks get a lot more steadily floors in expected points. So that's a good floor for a running back. Josh Jacobs is doing pretty well. Hasn't stayed consistent in the target share that we saw week one. But, I mean, he's fine. I still think he has a top 12 season, dynasty-wise. Yeah, he's going to need more targets to do that any week. Now, something he has up on Kerryon Johnson, who I once said the exact same thing about, is that he has the draft capital to maintain the role. He's likely not going to be Wally Pipped, and we know he's good in the receiving game, whereas Kerryon Johnson, we've really never seen a great deal of it in college. So I'm not panicking on Josh Jacobs. David Montgomery, this is just a career average at this point. This is what David Montgomery is. He's a top 24 running back, which is great, but I don't typically target top 24 running backs, especially if I'm playing for next year at this point, or even really this year, because top 24 running backs are the easiest way to just bleed your value away for borderline startable points that make your scoring look better, but they don't win you much, because top 24 running back prediction is kind of replaceable. I know I've seen a variety of takes, which is like, David Montgomery's proven people wrong. He's 14th overall in PPR points, for example. Yeah, this is why you don't want top 24 running backs. I mean, he hasn't won you shit. Sorry, he hasn't. That's why you shouldn't target them. So, yes, he's proving us wrong by proving us, incredibly correct. There you go. That's my David Montgomery take. Jarvis Landry, I would expect that, however, to bounce back up. He had -10 fantasy points over expected last week, which meant he got, 0.4 fantasy points last week, and he was given 10.63 expected points per game, expected points last game. That's fairly drastic. He had a bad game. Okay, it's that simple. I would expect him to bounce back because his volume and his efficiency on that volume is, as it typically is for Jarvis Landry, very good, very decent. It's kind of why top 24 wide receivers matter. Top 24 running backs kind of don't. Anyway, Jimmy Graham, I mean, he's a tight end. Woe is me, there's a tight end that's touchdown dependent. If he doesn't catch a touchdown, he's going to get incredibly bad negative fantasy points over expected. Like Jonu Smith, who people seem to have faded on recently, I expect it to come back. These guys are in their offense, they have the role. Jimmy Graham's actually got a 60% target share right now. He's back. I'm sorry, the good tight ends really never die. They just stop playing eventually. And so if they're playing, they can do this. Now we're talking about a certain level of good here, not the Jason Witten level of good. We're talking about Gronk and Graham, who literally compromise about 60% of the entire list of that level of quarterback in history. So, keep that in mind. But yeah, I do think Graham's going to come back. Interesting enough, Jordan Reed's back in the NFL, and I know he didn't do anything, but he's someone who always showed that ceiling, and then injuries, he never really got there. So he's not on the list. He's not on the list, frankly. I wasn't high on him. I didn't have him too high in projections either. I was always really gutted about, not disappointed with Jordan Reed, disappointed for him, maybe. I mean, he definitely had the talent. It's an if-healthy thing. There are very few players I you know, straight-faced will say if-healthy for. But, yeah, Jordan Reed, unfortunately, is one of them. Greg Olsen's the other one. Kind of not on that list, but he's borderline on that list. And he's got an 11% target share this year. He had 6 points, I think, thrown to him in expected points per game. And that's just his outright expected points per game. He underperformed his volume last week to the tune of -9 points. I'm guessing he missed a few things in that game that I actually didn't get to see that one, which I'm told is a shame. But yeah, I just don't think he has a huge role in this offense. I would expect that to continue too. He's one of the few people on this list that average fantasy points per game below average, just not quite as badly as David Montgomery and Josh Jacobs. But again, I think that's partly, well, David Montgomery have been through Josh Jacobs. It's a receiving game, man. It's just hard to sustain rushing production that way. Who else stood out to me on this one? Jared Goff. Interesting enough, I had to do a bit of a deep dive because I didn't really know how to compare quarterback efficiency and fantasy points over expected to anyone else. So this year, for example, quarterbacks are averaging 5.6 fantasy points over expected. So the top 12 quarterbacks average, so a pretty decent look at what we should expect from a good startable quarterback, around 5 fantasy points over expected. And so when you're underperforming that volume, it's actually fairly significant. Jared Goff, they had a terrible game. The whole team last week, I don't know, I'm lost at this point, all of them probably. He's averaging something like 4.4 fantasy points over expected. He's having a pretty decent season, to be honest, in the way quarterbacks do, because we should care less about quarterbacks. But yeah, he's fine. He's been fine overall as a start, as quarterback 13 on the season, I think he is, playing all eight games, which is better than some, right? But he was a little inefficient last week. I think this is in some way, although me and Jacob Rickrow still disagree on the mechanical mystery that is the connection between quarterback and wide receiver. However, whatever that calculation is, Cooper Kupp had like the 11th worst wide receiver performance for the season, according to fantasy points over expected, last week. So whatever mystical connection quarterbacks and wide receivers have in terms of who controls whose efficiency, that's partly why Jared Goff was underperforming. And again, he's someone on the list I expect to bounce back up. And he's a decent dynasty buy because we should compare less about quarterbacks. Now, quarterbacks, like I said, and especially in the top 12, do largely depend on being over-efficient. They're meant to outproduce their expected points, their total volume in the offense and where they get it on the field, according to RotoViz's model. It's worth keeping in mind that Deshaun Watson and Lamar Jackson's ADP may be dropping right now, and I said this in my article, but they're definitely good. We can, even me, quarterback, stay aware of evaluation. I'm very convinced both of them are very, very good. Now, Lamar Jackson's ADP is falling because it was jacked up from one of the most phenomenal rookie seasons we've ever seen from a quarterback, or just outright seasons. But the thing we have to remember is that quarterbacks do depend on over-efficiency. The ones that do that multiple times to end in the top five or have a fantasy significant season in single quarterback leagues, I mean, there aren't that many. And Matt Ryan and Cam Newton are on the list, not probably the two names that you were thinking of. Like, it's not Aaron Rodgers that comes to mind when I think about multiple repeats in the top five. It's Matt Ryan and Cam Newton. Now, the one guy, okay, this, I guess if I would say there's two. Okay, so Patrick Mahomes and Peyton Manning definitely justify jacking up their ADPs, even in single quarterback leagues, and going all in on these historic players. And that's it. Even Aaron Rodgers, who's having a resurgence, because for some reason everyone thought they could suddenly predict when players were going downhill, which we can't, even in an under-efficient season at an older age, doesn't mean they come back and are even worse. That doesn't happen. That's not a thing. The data people, my nerd bros, push every year about someone, and it's not true. You may as well just be flipping a coin. So stop it. And also stop jacking up the price of good wide receivers performing well in an early season. Now, that may sound, and I put a caution note in here, like an anti-Kyler Murray tweet, who's having a fantastic year, which I think is somewhat missed right now because of the love for Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert. But Kyler Murray is better than both of them, and he's producing better than both of them right now. And we had him ranked there before the season, and we have him ranked there during the season. And, like, I'm starting Patrick Mahomes and Kyler Murray and Scott Fishbowl, and it's really a coin flip which one scores me more points in that QB-heavy scoring format. He's having a balls-to-the-walls amazing quarterback season, and I don't hear anyone really mention it. Like, no one, because we're too obsessed with how great Justin Herbert is. Which is true, Justin Herbert's killing it. Joe Burrow is being an incredibly good rookie quarterback. I'm excited about both, but because they're rookies, it seems to have quite... I don't know, maybe that's just my small bubble. So I think his value might be soft. That's what I'm coming out on. Now, again, I don't buy quarterbacks, because... you should care less about quarterbacks in all formats. You just should. That's my process anyway. I'm happy to buy the Matt Ryans, Cam Newtons, and the guys who randomly, almost, always produce and are very good and have produced multiple top five seasons. And I get them for a lot less, and I'm fine. I do well. I win leagues. You don't have to have Patrick Mahomes, weirdly. I know. There's only been two, and people have won plenty of leagues without of them. Anyway, I'm getting stuck on my point here. This is not an anti-Kyler Murray thing. I'm a huge fan of Kyler Murray. I think what he's doing this season is incredibly impressive. Again, I think it should be what we're talking about at quarterback, not if Joe Burrow can do what he's doing now next year, maybe, without the running. We're weird sometimes. We're just... too focused on the new shiny thing that we forget this slightly less new shiny thing is killing it. But again, maybe that's just my small bubble. But again, Kyler Murray's ADP shot up way too high this offseason. The only reason I have him in the Scott Fishbowl is because quarterback scoring is so important, because it's jacked up beyond any league you've ever been in before, unless you're in the Scott Fishbowl this year, that it made it different. That's the only instance where it happens. Like, they're scoring me 30, 40, and 50 points every week. If quarterbacks do that in your league, yes, it might be worth jacking up their ADP into top five round territory in single quarterback leagues. Outside of that, you're nuts, you're insane, stop it. So, having said that, I do think Kyler Murray's value might be soft because there's a lot less hype around it, even though there should probably be more hype around it. But... this offseason, his ADP is definitely going to rise. And if you're looking towards next season already, he's someone to consider. Obviously, especially more in Superflex, but even in single QB leagues, I mean, he's a good young quarterback. If you can get him at a, not discount, but get him for a decent value, selling off assets that are mostly useful this year and are going to diminish in value in the future, that's a solid value move. That's a solid dynasty move, I think. Especially if you're fully in. We're on to the next season. Okay, so Jonathan Taylor, I've been talking for an hour. Shit. Pardon me, and swearing. Just noticed. I'm going to leave you with my Jonathan Taylor analysis. I do remember saying there was a little Trent Richardson-ness to his profile, and now seems like a perfect opportunity to do but I had him ranked 2. Overall, and also at the running back position as a rookie, and I was incredibly hopeful for him. I flipped him back and forward between Clyde Edwards-Helaire to the point that I just said they're both 1A, 1B in terms of my ranks. So that Trent Richardson-ness, which is kind of there, it was just an offhand comment, so leaning into it would be a lie. And also, I think now's the time to back out of it. Now, having said that, I just saw Jake Anderson, who used to co-host some show somewhere, traded Miles Sanders for Jonathan Taylor. Yeah, I'd do that a million times out of 10, because Miles Sanders is currently doing what we hope Jonathan Taylor may do someday. People are weird. about expectations, but Miles Sanders is too small. Yeah, but he's who you want, and that's who we hope Jonathan Taylor can be, but a bigger version, I guess. Anyway, moving on. If you're not looking at that kind of crazy valuation in your league, I'm kind of interested in him, especially if I'm pushing for 2020, because when I looked at his stats more closely, I've been under the impression that he was getting the opportunity and not doing so much with it, but especially when you look at fantasy points over expected. I mean, he's only had a 50% rushing attempt for the Colts twice this season. He's only had like over 13 carries a couple times. He's actually stuck in more of a problem like Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, and DeAndre Swift, who we recently saw a few of them start to break out of that, because we do expect these guys, if they're good, to do that eventually with the draft capital they have. Now, is it a little more concerning that Jonathan Taylor lost one of the guys that we thought was going to be part of the committee? Not to me, because I didn't buy that excuse anyway. He's got to push whoever's out the way. I am a little more concerned that he can't push Mr. Wilkins and out the way. But this last week was the first week he actually had an inefficient game. Before then, he was kind of right on the average, which isn't where you want to be. You want to be over-efficient to prove you're good, but he has had over-efficient games, at least one significantly over-efficient. I think it was week 3, that one game where we thought he was finally broken out. So what I'm saying is the feeling on Jonathan Taylor is more negative for good reason, but it's good reason based on a very small recency-biased sample size. His college profile is still great. Scrub out the Trent Richardson comment because it was offhand and really just a dig at Russia more than a receiver, kind of a running back. And yeah, he's kind of struggling the same way Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, and DeAndre Swift, who are a lot more excited about right now, I think, than Jonathan Taylor, because he had one bad week. I don't think that's the way to judge him. Having said that, I believe right now he is what we thought he was, not what we now think he is, if that makes sense. So for 2020, because running backs are always kind of a more this year move, even young ones, no matter what Addison Hayes said about buying Zeke Elliott on Twitter in Dynasty the other day, because apparently he thinks he can move him for like Nyheim Hines. I don't think he can get that done, but still. What the hell? Cam Akers, J.K. Dobbins, DeAndre Swift. Jonathan Taylor's in that category still. Maybe not at the head of it. He's just one in the middle. But he's the one who would be easier to trade for. I probably still want Cam Akers. But just saying, it might be worth testing the waters. And that's my dynasty move, my dynasty sense on Jonathan Taylor right now. I also have a big section in this article, and I got to get out of here. I've been on here an hour. It's Corey Davis season. I thought everyone who knew me knew this, but apparently a few people still don't. Someone was miraculously revealing that he's wide receiver 16 in points per game this year. I mean, get behind the line, man. I'm at the front of the Corey Davis train. What is this discovering that Corey Davis is having a good year? Yeah, he's having a top 25 target share. He is 16th in point per game. He has a 1.14 yards per team pass attempt, or just yards per team attempt, sorry, which actually ranks second for any wide receiver who has an ADOT in and around 10, which is actually a fairly common ADOT for a wide receiver getting large volume of his team's offense outside of extreme downfield receivers like Julio Jones, for example, who typically has a large ADOT. So yeah, he's having a phenomenal season. Yes, AJ Brown is a hot smoking dynasty asset we should all want, and Corey Davis is a fourth year breakout. It looks sustainable, and I am in, man. I have got Corey Davis on 4 out of 5 dynasty teams before the season, and I am reveling in it. I'm enjoying it. It is Corey Davis season, just in case you didn't know. It's Corey Davis season. All right, I'm getting out of here. Thanks for checking out. If you did, leave a comment, I guess. This is a podcast, so that's difficult to do. So maybe leave a review. You know the things to do. And hit me up on Twitter, at PA Howdy anytime. I'm going to go get some sleep. Have a nice day. Thanks again. Bye.
Yeah. chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Picking my nose, don't really know if I like that. Picking their brains, got different lanes, but I like that. Picking these guys, all of these times, all of these nice stats. Picking apart, the film is an art, always a fight. Back and forth, there is no order, they disorder more and more. Because the players ain't no older, they some hoarders or some mortars. Dropping bombs without no borders, Jake got that I like Mordor. Peak grinding numbers like molars, I don't know anymore. I am at a crossroads. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical. Chicken or crow, crossing the road, go. Clicking a poll, Twitter is gold, player unfold, so. Jake on the table and Nate on the play, so. Pete enumerates the plays, they're analytical.